This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer, indeed. And today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at some things that are happening in, well, the areas north of our country. Areas north of our country, like Canada and like Ireland. You see, there are some things going on in our world, even the Western world, that we really don't understand and can hardly comprehend, but they are happening. And they're happening. They're closing in on us as a country. Not only are they closing in, but some of those things are happening also in our country. It's a series of attacks that have ignited and targeted Enoch Burke, a school teacher in Ireland, for 3 years already, and it's been elevated now to the point authorities have ordered him to be jailed over the Christmas holiday because of his adherence to science and fact. Please listen to this, friends. The fight is over orders from officials at his school to lie by using the pronouns they and them for a student who claims to be transgender. Well, that, of course, defies science, as being male or female is embedded in humans down to the DNA level, and it doesn't change. But then again, Live Action's Lila Rose commented on the orders, saying, "Ireland is no longer free. Ireland, teacher Enoch Burke, will spend Christmas in jail after refusing to preferred pronouns for a trans-identifying student citing his religious beliefs. The school then initiated a disciplinary process preventing him from teaching. After multiple attempts to fight what he believed was religious persecution, Enoch was arrested. Mr. Burke has ordered back to prison 2 weeks ago for contempt by court, by continuing to turn up at Wilson's Hospital School, despite a court order directing him not to trespass. The judge accused Mr. Burke and his family of engaging in the most deliberate, sustained, and concerted attack on the authority of the civil courts and the rule of law in the country in recent times." Wow. The report explained Mr. Burke has spent more than 500 days in prison for refusing to abide by court orders. He claims he's turning up for work at the school as his right. The courts have usually ordered his release from prison during the school holidays. But the judge, Brian Cragen, claimed fines and the appointment of security guards had failed to stop Mr. Burke turning up at the school, and there was no option but to put him in prison again. Wow. Friends, this is a young man who decided he was going to stand in principle rather than succumb to the court's order to lie, and they're going to compel him to violate his conscience, violate his faith as a Christian, and to use the transgender pronouns. What should he do? What would you do? Well, Canadian legislators are on the cusp of eliminating key religious protections for the nation's hate speech statutes, potentially paving the way for prosecutions over biblical teachings on marriage, sexuality, and other faith-based views. Under a reported bipartisan deal between the ruling Liberal Party and the religious exemptions from Canadian hate speech laws would be eliminated in order to advance support for Bill C-9, which would criminalize the display of the Nazi swastika and other anti-Semitic expressions. Canadian law currently exempts any hateful or anti-Semitic speech expressed or attempted to establish by an argument, an opinion on a religious subject, or an opinion based on a belief in a religious text. Such speech is also exempted when it is intended to point out, for the purpose of removal, matters producing or tending to produce feelings of hatred toward an identifiable group in Canada, or if they expressed or attempted to establish by an argument an opinion on a religious subject or an opinion based on a belief in a religious text. It appears in Canada, anyone who makes any statement other than in private conversation, which willfully promotes anti-Semitism by condoning, denying, or downplaying the Holocaust, faces up to 2 years in prison if convicted. But Bill C-9, if passed, would expand Canada's hate speech laws to criminalize the display of the Nazi swastika and any symbol of Nazi SS regime, and would criminalize many other expressions. Silencing offensive speech, including anything concerning the Christian faith in Canada. Who would have ever believed it? Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer's conversation with ever-increasing conviction. Talk that transforms. And in Oklahoma, a student in a battle with transgender teaching assistant at the University of Oklahoma now has won, well, not until after the Oklahoma state representative getting vicious and lethal threats after coming to the defense of a Christian student who received a zero grade from a transgender teaching assistant merely for championing God's gender roles outlined in the Bible. Republican Gabe Woolley shared the audio of one menacing message stating, "Hi, this is a message for Representative Gabe Woolley. Could you please pass this message to him? Tell him to put a gun in his mouth and pull the trigger for all our sakes. Thank you. Bye." Well, Woolley had expressed support for Samantha Fulnicki, a student at the University of Oklahoma who was given a failing grade by the professor, a graduate teaching assistant who is a man pretending to be a woman. So, Kurth condemned the student's references to the Bible and faith and insisted instead she should adopt the teacher's ideologies. The teacher has since been removed from the classroom, but the school now has agreed to discard the transgender teaching assistant's failing grade. Well, that's good. But the problem is that in Oklahoma, the center of the Bible Belt in America, it seems that persecution for things related to the Bible has become almost normative. Then, it seems that America's northern neighbor is far from freedom-tolerant nation. If you have wrong beliefs and refuse government demands that you apologize for them, you'll be in a lot of trouble. You're going to be cuffed and arrested. And that happened to Pastor Derek Reamer, who refused to comply with a court order that he apologize for his own personal opinions on drag queens and the LGBT lifestyle. And so now he's been convicted of harassment for objecting to a drag queen focused on grooming children. Wow.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Well, I welcome you to Viewpoint, friends. Yes, indeed, things are happening in Ireland. They're happening in Canada. They're happening in the United States. In fact, persecution is rising. It's hard for us to believe, but in fact, it is true. And it's moving very quickly. It moves through the courts in civil issues, and now the faith has become criminalized. And yet Canada seems to be trying to protect against anti-Semitism, but at the same time, protect the whole people from the Bible, from anybody who expresses beliefs in the Bible as it relates to, well, so-called woke subjects of transgenderism, homosexuality, and so on. Anything that would be deemed to be offensive. So, I have a question for you as we move on into the program today. We're not going to cite more of those kinds of issues. It wouldn't do any good. We either believe that these things are happening or we don't believe them. So the question that I have for you is, let's assume now, for argument's sake or discussion's sake, that these things are moving very rapidly into our own country and are taking on the very kind of symptoms and patterns that caused Nazism to begin to take over so-called Christian Europe. So-called Christian Europe. Yeah, it was called Christian Europe. Not so much anymore, but it was called Christian Europe. And yet Nazism was able to make its way across virtually all of Europe. And it came in insidiously, initially, sort of like on little cat feet, until the fog actually enveloped all of Europe. How in the world could Nazism, under the viciousness of Adolf Hitler, take over so-called Christian Europe? How could it do that? How could it do that in a matter of about 5 or 6 years? Well, we know that it did. So how do you look at the peoples of Europe, particularly Western Europe, so-called Christian Europe? How are we to understand that the peoples of Western Europe allowed this to happen? And they had their Jewish friends, and they saw that this kind of thing was happening, the persecution of the Jews, and they saw it coming in. They saw the isolation of the Jews. They saw them required to wear these little yellow badges and so on. They saw these things happening, but did nothing. Nobody did anything. Well, hardly anybody did anything. But there were a few who gradually began to see that this was real, that persecution really was real. They called it anti-Semitism, but persecution was real. Now what am I going to do? So the question then is, if persecution is real and it comes on like it did in Western or Christian Europe, as it did, and eventually took over and became a curse of darkness over the entire area, yet it was supposedly was filled with all kinds of Christians. How did it happen? What did they do? Or not? What would you do? Or not? Let's suppose that you found that your neighbor was involved and had been involved, was looked upon, investigated by the American Gestapo, so to speak, the police who were enforcing, as in Canada, enforcing these anti-biblical laws to compel and prevent anyone from speaking other than going along with the anti-biblical agendas. You have to speak what they say. If you don't speak it that way, you're off to the clink or off with your head, depending on how far along this goes. A man jailed for 500 days and being called the most horrible, violent reprobate by the court for not succumbing to agree to the court's mandate to agree with LGBTQ and transgender agendas that address people by false names and so on? Really? That's serious? Well, that's how it was in the days of Adolf Hitler. Because if you didn't agree with the Nazi viewpoint, then you are by definition an enemy of the state. If you were in favor of a Jew, you were an enemy of the state and entitled to the very same treatment that they intended to deliver to the Jewish people. Your Jewish neighbor, your friend across the street, the person you worked with, and so on. What would you do? It's a real question, because it's going to happen. In fact, it is happening. What would you do? How would you respond? I'm asking myself the same question, quite frankly. I really am. And I want to introduce to you today on Viewpoint a fellow who was born in 1944. He was born in 1944 in a peasant house in Le Chambon, France. Le Chambon-sur-Lignon, a few months before the end of the German occupation of France. He's now president of the Friends of Le Chambon, and I believe still lives in California. But what happened to Le Chambon? And why was this man, born after World War II, or right at the end, why was he so concerned about what happened in Le Chambon? His name is Pierre Sauvage. And he writes in a book entitled The Courage to Care, Rescuers of Jews During the Holocaust. I want to share some excerpts with you of what he wrote. It's called 10 Questions, and we won't necessarily go through all 10 of those questions, but we will go through some of them. And this book was published in 1986, called The Courage to Care. And of course, the question hovering over the balance of our program today is, do you have the courage to care amid these kinds of circumstances? There was a new parish that had been established there in the sleepy mountain community of Le Chambon. It had one promising feature. The pastor, André Trochamé, in a letter to an American friend dated September 19, 1934, described the village of Le Chambon in France like this. Here the old Huguenot spirit is alive. The humblest peasant home has his Bible, and the father reads it every day. So these people who do not read the papers but the scriptures do not stand on the moving soil of opinion, but on the rock of the Word of God. Well, time would soon prove just how right he was after writing that letter. In the last few years, this writer says, Pierre Sauvage, I've come to sense in my bones and in my soul the importance of what the people of Le Chambon and others like them can tell us about ourselves, if only we could learn to listen. Above all, what I have learned is that we need to know about the righteous Gentiles during the Holocaust far more than they need our gratitude. Virtually all the people of the area of Le Chambon consider themselves committed Christians. Most of them are the descendants of the Huguenots who fled South Central France so that they might continue practicing Christianity without persecution by the kings and Catholics of France. Well, this came very close to home, friends, as I read this, because I live in a town just outside Richmond, Virginia, to which the Huguenots fled from France under massive persecution, the most famous of which was the St. Bartholomew Day persecution, in which thousands and thousands of Christian Huguenots were massacred by the Roman Catholic Church. And its representatives. And so, these Huguenots, some of them were still there in France. And the city, their town, Le Chambon, a mountain community, was the old Huguenot spirit that was still alive. The humblest peasant home had its Bible. The father read it every day. So these people who do not read the papers but the scriptures do not stand on the moving soil of opinion, but on the rock of the Word of God. That's what the pastor, André Trochamé, said in a letter to an American friend on September 19th, 1934, describing the village. Now, that having been the background, we go on with the writings of Pierre Sauvage. The Holocaust occurred in the heart of Christian Europe and would not have been possible without the apathy or complicity of most Christians and without the virulent tradition of anti-Semitism that had long infected the very soul of Christianity. Are we to view these Christians of Le Chambon of that time as rare but representative and exemplary Christian faith, or merely as a marginal, possibly accidental success of the Christian faith? This man is writing as a Jew. He's looking back, born in 1944, a year before I was born. He's looking back at what happened and trying to make sense of it as a Jewish man, because most of those who stood in the gap to help were Christians. But they were very few. He says, much psychology, social scientists, traumatized secular Jews like me wish to minimize the spiritual and religious aspects, dimensions of righteous conduct during the Holocaust. What did the peasants and villagers of Le Chambon understand that so tragically eluded their Christian brethren from the Pope on down in so-called Christian Europe? Could it be that the righteous Christians were exceptionally comfortable with the Jewish roots of their faith? Was Christianity perhaps more the religion of Jesus than the religion about Jesus? In Le Chambon, many Jews never got over their astonishment at being not only sheltered but welcomed as the people of God, that is, the chosen people. So what can we learn from the dramatic effectiveness of these weapons of the Spirit in Le Chambon, weapons of the Spirit of Christ in Christians who truly acted like Christians? And to my fellow Jews, he writes, I would also like to ask, in this most perilous time of history, do we not have a special incentive to be interested in the only weapons that were specifically and productively used by others at the time to save some of us? That is, the spiritual weapons? Not swords, not guns, not bombs, but the spiritual lessons. In Le Chambon, as elsewhere, women played a key role in rescue. Faced with initial all-important decisions as to whether or not to take a stranger into their kitchens and into their homes could imperil the lives of their families. Do conventional male values limit our perspective on resistance during the Holocaust, he writes? The people of Le Chambon, as Protestants in a Catholic country, were no doubt especially sensitive to the oppression of minorities. And it could be that many of the righteous Gentiles had greater sense of this. Notice over and over, he refers to them as righteous Gentiles. So he's talking about Gentiles. Gentile Christians who were so rare as to be able to stand, and having done all to stand amid the horrors of the Holocaust. Where do we stand? That's really the question. Where do we stand? We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. We're confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. Things that we don't necessarily want to talk about. Things that we don't necessarily want to think about. But maybe we're not prepared for the times that are coming. Maybe we're just not prepared, and we don't think we need to be prepared because we've been given false promises. Well, it can never happen to you, because absolutely, you're an American. But it is happening here, and it's happening in our surrounding countries, Canada, up there in Northern Ireland, and then also, I mean, over in the UK. My goodness, friends. London is becoming almost Muslim. The UK now is under, many places are under Sharia law. You think you wouldn't be persecuted there? Absolutely. Big time. Might not even survive. Because these things are advancing very rapidly. New York just elected a radicalized Muslim mayor who thinks that the Intifada, the war against Jews, should become globalized everywhere. And he was just elected mayor of the largest city in America, friends. And you think it can't happen here? We kind of have our heads in the sand. We're not thinking biblically. We're not thinking in terms of what Jesus has told us, that in the latter times, Paul said, perilous times will come. These are those times, friends. We see it happening all around us, but we're kind of like the frog in the kettle. We're becoming inured to it. As the heat turns up, we're becoming more and more inured to it until we're actually cooked alive, like the frog. Well, I believe one of the reasons why the Lord prompted me, inspired me, actually, to write the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, was precisely because he knows of our condition. We're not ready. We're not ready to stand in the evil day. We're not ready to stand when persecution comes. Many will deny Christ. Many will capitulate, just as they did with Hitler, to save their own skin. And they certainly won't stand in the gap to save somebody else's skin. So maybe this is what Jesus was talking about when he said many are going to rise up in their own homes against their parents. That's what Jesus said. Characteristic of these end times. The persecution will come not just from the outside, but from the inside. Reporting on their own parents to authorities, to the world government authorities, because, well, they're afraid if they don't, they're going to come under the dominion, the negative opinion of the world authorities that say, if you don't agree with us, you're not going to be able to eat, you're not going to be able to transact business, we're going to cut you off from your digital money and your digital medical care, and it's not going to work for you anymore. Oh, okay. Well, here, I'll let you know the names of all the people that I know that are truly following Christ. That's what happened in Christian Europe, friends. It did. And you hear the phrase, never again, never again, but never again is already occurring again all over the world. And it's not just the Jews, it's Christians now. When a member of parliament in Finland, a Christian member of parliament in Finland, can be prosecuted three times in a row, even though the higher courts have said no and cast out the convictions, they're still doing it again. It's called persecution. And that level of persecution under color of law will soon become more violent. And not only threaten to restrict you in a jail cell, but perhaps ultimately restrict you from being able to eat, pay your bills, drive a car, and so on. That's what Revelation 13 is all about. I know it's very hard to think about these things, but friends, please understand, if we're not prepared in advance, our minds and our hearts are not prepared, we are very likely to succumb, just like the majority did in so-called Christian Europe, in every country, almost every country. It was like the dominoes just flipping down every time in favor of Adolf Hitler and the march of Nazism. He intended to rule the world, friends. And he was on the march. But there's one coming soon called the counterfeit Christ, the Antichrist, that will be even more virile, more dedicated, more violent, and of a greater world vision than Hitler. We don't yet know his name. We just know him by the title Antichrist. If you want to know more about him, you might want to get a copy of my book, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. It's a $22 book, yours for $18 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. Now, I'd like to go back and pick up the lengthy, thought-provoking analysis of Pierre Sauvage, born in 1944, the year before the conclusion of World War II, 1 year before I was born, 1 year before the United Nations was formed. He's going on and continuing to analyze and really some piercing thoughts about how did this happen? What is it about these righteous Gentiles? He's not talking about all the professing Christians. He's only talking about some who actually lived like it, who actually seemed to have an understanding of the kingdom of God. He says, the moment I became interested in righteous conduct, I had to start rethinking my vocabulary. Words such as righteous and Gentile appear unavoidable then. The people of Le Chambon had a very secure, very anchored sense of their self, a spontaneous access to the core of their being that resulted in a natural and irresistible proclivity to see the truth and act upon it. Many or all of these righteous Gentiles of the Holocaust displayed this same characteristic. What was that? It was a truly deep Christian faith to which they were absolutely unequivocally committed come hell or high water. It wasn't just a theoretical faith. It was real. It was the lodestone, the guiding star of their life at every level, no matter what happened, no matter where it came. And this Jewish man is writing, it's a rare righteous Gentile who believes that there was something remarkable about his or her own courage. The people endangered the lives of each and every one of had been critical of the decision-making process. Could it be that whenever we overemphasize the courage of the righteous, we do not communicate anything about its true nature? A glib reference to the courageous people of Le Chambon may have a hollow ring to our ears. To the subconscious intent of such vocabulary is, in fact, to make such people seem essentially different from you and me, and thus not really, not challengingly relevant to our daily lives. They're courageous, we're not. Well, God told Joshua, remember, be strong and courageous. Do not tremble. Do not tremble. Be strong and courageous. I'm looking right now at on the broadcast desk, right in front of me, is a wonderful little plaque that says straight in front of me, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. As I sit before you every single day here for over 30 years, confronting the deepest issues of our hearts and homes as Christians before God, one has to be strong and courageous because so many people are not wanting to hear. They're not willing to hear. They're resistant. Just like the people that Moses was supposed to be leading out of Egypt into the promised land, they were so resistant, they could not grasp that God was really God. He had taken them across the Red Sea, showed them mighty acts and so on. But they were stubborn, they were resistant, they weren't really, they were the chosen people, but they were not acting like the chosen people. And so they didn't make it to the promised land. Not one of, well, I shouldn't say not one, only two men, age 20 and older, who left Egypt, were allowed by God into the promised land. Why? Because they had another spirit. That's what this Jewish man is noticing, looking back about what happened in the days of Hitler in this town called Le Chambon, France. We'll finish up with that in just a few moments. I hope you'll stay tuned because I want to also provide you, remind you of the special offer that we have made. And quite a number of people now are saying, you know what? I really appreciate that offer that you've made. We want to get those books. We'll be right back after this, friends. This is Hubert.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
In 1986, a special book was written called The Courage to Care, Rescuers of Jews During the Holocaust. The final entry, there are many people that are recorded and their words describing what happened in various places throughout so-called Christian Europe. But the closing statement article was written by Pierre Sauvage, who was not even living then. He was born in 1944, just at the close, just before the close of World War II. He goes on to discuss what happened in Le Chambon, France, and his conclusions are very interesting. Remember, he's coming as a Jewish man looking at what he sees as a very unusual, shall we say, remnant, very small remnant of what he sees to be true Christians at that time. He said traditional hierarchical leadership was largely absent among the Christians when it came to resisting the appeal of Nazism. We must learn to recognize real leaders in a time of moral decay, and we should study the forms that their leadership takes. It appears that the people of Le Chambon often did not know about the rescue efforts their neighbors were making. They barely, if ever, talked about it, even after the war when the Jews left. The conspiracy, he calls it the conspiracy of goodness that occurred, was a tacit and unspoken one, not something they bragged about. He said, to my knowledge, an instance of communal righteousness like this did not occur on this scale for the length of time anywhere else in occupied Europe, except what happened in the town of Le Chambon, France. He said, did it result from individual responsibility that starts with oneself? Maybe so. It wasn't a collective thing. They didn't collectively work together. They were inspired individually because there was something deep inside each one of them as a true follower of Jesus Christ that was different than the so-called Christianity of the majority of Christian Europe. That's really what he's saying. So he refers to a famous writer called Albert Camus, who wrote an allegorical novel, The Plague. Now, Albert Camus was nowhere near a Christian, but he writes of the kind of person that is able to stand when everything else says, you can't stand against this. He says there was always comes a time in history when the man who dares to say that 2 + 2 = 4 is punished with death. The issue is not a matter of what reward or what punishment will become outcome of that reasoning. The issue is simply whether or not 2 + 2 = 4. For those of our townspeople who were then risking their lives, the decision they had to make was simply whether or not they were in the midst of a plague and whether or not it was necessary to struggle against it. So, Pierre Sauvage concludes his article saying the challenge for each of us now is to learn to understand the nature of goodness as a Christian, even during the Holocaust, and to recognize that to care about other people is also to care about yourself. And interestingly, going back to the Holocaust, I believe it was Viktor Frankl. I could be wrong. It might have been Erich Fromm. But one of those two said he... now this phrase is skipping me. My hard drive has gone blank. Anyway, perhaps I will remember it in a few moments. So in any event, happiness is a door opening outward. Happiness is a door opening outward. As Americans and even American Christians, we're prone because of our culture to think that happiness is a door opening inward. So it's all about me. So we live not only in the me generation, but in the me generation. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul said was going to happen in the perilous times to come. He said, Men will be lovers of themselves, unthankful, unholy, and so on. So, we're in that kind of time. Apparently, so-called Christian Europe was actually under that feeling, preparing for the Holocaust. So when Pierre Savage writes and says, the challenge for us now is to learn to understand the nature of goodness, even during the Holocaust, to recognize that to care about other people is also to care about yourself. In other words, if you're really a Christian, if you really care, if you're really what you say you are, then it's going to be expressed in how you live, in how you treat other people. And as the virtual atheist Albert Camus said, there comes a time in history when the man, and I'm going to say also the woman, who dares to say that 2 + 2 = 4 will be punished with death. In other words, to admit and declare the truth takes a level of boldness and courage to stand when nobody else will stand. That, my friends, is why we introduced the program today with the challenging articles coming from Ireland, coming from Canada, coming from the U.S., where people were being required under color of law to say things that were not true, to use pronouns that were not true. And they were being impressed into jail. One man already 500 days for refusing to capitulate to the court's mandate to use words like, you know, the pronouns they or them in accordance with transgender ideology. So if they can do that, if they can do that under color of law, why then can they not do the same thing with regard to anything else related to the Christian life and faith, even to the point of denying Christ, even to the point of receiving a mark that expresses your allegiance, your absolute allegiance and trust in a new world government under a counterfeit Christ figure? That's exactly what the Bible says is going to happen. And we see the whole digital world moving in that direction. That's why we've done a number of programs dealing with that, helping God's people to realize what is coming so that you can prepare your children, your grandchildren, pastors, you can prepare the people and so on. When are we going to agree that 2 + 2 = 4? Even if we're given a death sentence or refuse to allow the digital money that supposedly is ours not to be allowed to be used by us either for medical care or for food or anything else because we refuse to succumb to the mandate of the world government. Are you beginning to see what we're talking about here? That this is not just something superficial. It's not a theory. It's a reality. In chapter 10 of my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, it's titled, Prevailing Faith Amid Persecution. Persecution will test our patience, but genuine faith will enable us to prevail. This is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. Not some passive, bland kind of, well, I'm a person of faith. That means nothing. Without this kind of faith that we're talking about, it's impossible to please God. So we must not only believe in God, that he exists, but rather we must truly believe him. Take him at his word, trust him absolutely, So the spiritual battle against our souls is both from within and without. It's raging. Spiritual survival demands victory. That's the truest test of our faith. And the battle lines are drawn. For decades, maybe generations, we as professing Christians have faced varying levels of what we might best be described as spiritual skirmishes. Yet these entry-level skirmishes have presented challenges to the broader body of Christ, but for the Western professing followers of Jesus as Messiah, they have been relatively minor in light of biblical prophecy. Such preparatory skirmishes exploded to biblically prophetic proportions in many non-Western nations. The levels of persecution experienced throughout the non-Western nations is now dramatically metastasizing throughout the Western purportedly Christian nations, reaching blasphemous levels supported shockingly by American popular culture and politics. Manifestation of these changes within the United States have become clear as revealed in the unprecedented political and cultural divide in what is commonly identified as blue states and red states. While those generic broad-brush designations describing the political divide at root, they may more accurately describe the spiritual divide. And it's not a spiritual divide only. It's rather a spiritual war that is now raging throughout the land of the free, increasingly becoming only the home of the brave. And the violence that's coursing through America's and Europe's streets is a litmus test revealing Jesus' warning that as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. In other words, the period preceding Christ's return. Lawlessness prevails, preparing the way for exacerbated persecution against those who follow God's laws of righteousness. The battle lines are being drawn. Almost with precision, the fear of the Lord has not only been abandoned, but despised throughout America and the West. Therefore, those whose lives are guided fundamentally by the fear of the Lord and biblical authority are to be despised and rejected at best, and to be ultimately driven from society as the enemies of global peace through persecution. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. You might want to get a copy of that book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. It actually is an encouraging book to help us understand, to be prepared, how to live by faith, how to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might, and so on. My wife doesn't like to deal with issues of stress. But she says, Chuck, this book is really a positive book. It's a $25 book, yours for $22 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at $6 for postage and handling. But here is the special offer again. As one of our listeners has requested, for your gift of $150, we will make all 11 of my books available to you. That is a dramatic reduction, much lower than all of the other prices on our website that are already reduced prices. $150 will put all 11 books in your hands, and there will only be a $26 postage and handling fee. That's $2 a book, $6 for the first book. So if you write a check, $176. Otherwise, go to the website, saveus.org. There's a special place to make that, effectuate that order. Do it today, friends. You might want to give some of these books as gifts. Maybe you have some of them, you don't have all of them. What an opportunity at a radically reduced price. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.